Hey friends, before we dive in, my new book, Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth, is out now, available on intentionalparents.org exclusively, so go check that out. Christmas is coming. What a great Christmas present to get your family praying. And don't miss our upcoming retreats, the Intentional Fatherhood Retreat, February 19 through 21, 2026, in Costa Mesa, California, and the Intentional Motherhood Retreat. We announced this April 23rd through 25th, 2026 in Franklin, Tennessee. Please come out and know that early bird pricing is on both of those events, so check that out. These retreats are spaces to pause, breathe, and invest in your spiritual formation as a parent. So learn more, get your tickets now at intentionalparents.org, and let's get into this week's episode. You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast, everybody. And if you were just listening to that, that's B-roll. That's like just stuff those are often conversations before we start, but this will be the official start moment. So welcome back. And thank you to everybody who has rated and subscribed and joined on YouTube and all these wonderful places. Thank you. And wherever you get content, please know that you can go to anywhere that you listen to the podcast or listen to podcasts, and we're there. Or if you want to check out YouTube, that's great. And if you want to leave a thumbs up on YouTube or rate and subscribe and even leave a comment on Apple or Spotify, you know that helps us, and thank you. We've said it 1,000 times, and we appreciate it. Something funny, I bumped into somebody. We were speaking in Denver. Oh, we should talk about that. That was a great time.
That was so fun.
That was great. People of Denver, if you're listening, we love you. Great, great, great time with House Denver. But somebody came up, and I hadn't met them before, and they came up after we spoke on Saturday, and she was like, "Hi, nice to meet you." And she's listening right now. She feels embarrassed, and I can't remember your name because I apologize. Like, it's blanking right in this moment. But she said, "I've been meaning to rate and subscribe and leave a comment, and I just haven't done it." And I was like, "Do you understand? I don't know who does or doesn't. Like, I want you to know, I can't tell."
Not keeping track.
The people who keep track of these things do not know your name or if you've listened to it. I don't, and they don't give it to me, I'll tell you that. So it was just a funny people carrying this guilt around.
Can I have a moment of honesty?
Sure.
I have never rated or left a comment
on any
podcast.
Yeah. That's probably actually more common than not. Like,
I have subscribed when I remember to hit the little thing at the top.
I'm going to say though, the sisters win this one. I think that guys specifically do not, and obviously you're saying you have it, but I think the majority of those who take the time to do it are mm-hmm. the sisters. So thank you, sisters. We mm-hmm. appreciate you mm-hmm. a lot. Mm-hmm. And also, we are in our house today, and we have like everything in the world of construction going on outside our house. So if you're hearing all sorts of things, please just know that
I can feel the floor vibrating.
The floor is like shaking right now. I guess they're going to put down concrete today.
Yeah, there's a neighborhood going in across the street.
Yes. It was a beautiful field at first.
I know.
It was beautiful.
With a red barn.
Great red barn.
That was great. Yes.
First world problems.
Couple things. Well, we were just in Denver. We had the greatest time with House Denver. What a wonderful group of people. And we're so honored to just connect with those in that area. There's a lot of folks that listen there. And then a couple cool things from this past week is this past Sunday was the 20th anniversary of the church that you guys pioneered the whole thing. It was called Solid Rock. We were all a part of it at the beginning. And it was the 20th anniversary, the 20th birthday, and you guys went back and spoke. And what a cool moment. What a cool time to just think through the history of all of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was. It didn't seem like it's 20 years ago. Did it? It seems like maybe 10 years ago.
Time flies when you're having fun. Yeah. No, it's true. They say when you get older, it seems like time goes faster.
Yeah.
And it obviously doesn't, but it sure does feel like it. No, it's pretty special for us because you guys walked in and surprised us. We didn't know you were coming.
No.
And all of a sudden, between the first and second gathering, you guys came in with the grandkids. And it was
Maybe
comforting.
For context for people that are listening, the event was in Portland.
Yeah.
And that's 3 hour drive from where we live. So we decided, I think it was like Saturday night, and I was very, "Hey, thank you for being open to the idea." But I said, "Hey, don't shoot this idea down. But what if we like left and took everyone really early in the morning, drove 3 hours, surprised your parents were there for the event, you know, got to say hi and connect with a ton of old friends, grab sushi because our kids are really into sushi right now, like mm-hmm. an aggressive amount of fish. They love it. And then
drive back the same day. She was actually open to it.
It's like, if I don't have to pack six people to stay the night somewhere, I'm down.
I'm down.
But it was special having you guys there. And then Matthew, our youngest son, Matthew was playing drums like 5 feet from me.
Yep.
And then Simona came with our ninth grandson, four-month-old Solomon, and we got to show him off.
Yeah.
And then Jean-Marc, you know, brought a greeting because he was part of the church plant as well. Mm. Which, you know, eventually led to Bridgetown. Yep. So it was kind of cool as parents and grandparents, mm-hmm. you know, three of our four kids were yeah. there that day. So
yeah,
it was beautiful. Special. And five of our grandkids. So yes. that was pretty special. And we got to share the vision that God gave us initially.
Yes.
In planting the church.
So. Well, we're looking forward to it. By the time this episode comes out, we're going to be really close to summertime. Mm-hmm. So summer's going to be close. I know many people are feeling that. And then we've said it here before, but we're going to be actually in Forest Home. If you haven't gotten tickets for Forest Home, we'll be there the 23rd through the 29th or somewhere around there. I think those are the mm-hmm. dates. But we're going to be speaking morning and night, our team there. And mm-hmm. so if you're signed up, awesome. If not, and there's room, go check that out. There's mm-hmm. the show notes. And then mm-hmm. we're, what's another thing we're doing? We're doing something else. Why am I blanking on it?
Tacoma.
Oh, the mother. Well, we're going to be in Tacoma. I think this will probably come out past that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll already be done with Tacoma. Bye, Tacoma. I'm sure it was a wonderful event. is my guess. Wonderful people. Can't wait to be with them. But I was also going to say the thing I remembered: the motherhood retreat. So mm-hmm. we're going to have that. So if you haven't signed up for that, take a second. Yeah. I know we're in full planning mode with that right now, which is really fun.
Yeah.
So, ladies, you excited for that?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I ask. Well, I just like to check in once in a while.
I am really excited for it. We're really just starting preparing our messages. It feels like there's already a theme that the Holy Spirit has shown for us to camp out on. I'm really excited about that. But one thing I do want to remind mothers, this is for mothers of all ages.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, our target, it's mostly moms of young kids. But the message that we have is not so much telling you how to raise your kids.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of people telling you how to raise your kids, but really even more, you know, what it means to be a mother. What is that identity? And my fun research this whole year has been into the motif of motherhood from Genesis through Revelations in the Bible. And I've just learned so much. It is so rich. I can't wait to share more about what that means. So, and even if you don't have kids yet, one of the fun nuggets that I've discovered that is that we are made, named Eve as a mother of all living, whether or not we have kids. This is just part of our identity.
You're giving stuff away.
No,
you
save it.
No, you just have to hush. No, we are going to respectfully shut you down.
Come to the motherhood retreat to learn more.
And also, I know that not everyone can plan and people are last minute, but I am telling you, you will be blessed if you grab a ticket early rather than later, because our culture and everyone listening knows this. We all wait and go like, what are the options? Or maybe last minute. Some people have to be last minute. We get that. Mm-hmm. But if you can plan, not only does it help us, but my goodness, it helps you.
Yeah.
And we have a ton of ladies signed up already, and we're really excited for what happens.
What I'm just thinking of the person listening who's like, I'm not 100% sure what people can get refunds, right? If they like
come. Of course. I think it's like, well, I don't want to quote it because I actually don't know, but we do have a whole refund thing on our website. So under the Motherhood Retreat page, go check that out.
I think it's up to 2 weeks before or something.
Yeah,
like
I can't remember, and I don't want to misquote it and confuse people because I could definitely do that. And so we'll figure it out. But yeah, go check out the website. It has it. And if I remember by the end of this episode, I'll say. But let's get into today. Something fun is we just sent some stuff out on social media and said, hey, ask questions. And we have a bunch of questions that we keep. Some of you are really kind and you send these beautiful emails that like are so moving, and your questions are incredible. And we try to catalog as many of those questions as we can. It's really hard to keep up with all the questions. So just please know, if you have sent in a question and we haven't gotten to it, it's not because we're not trying to. It's because we have such a backlog, is the first thing to say. Secondly, I think there's some fun questions that came in, some heavy ones and some fun ones. But I also wanted us to do kind of a Q&R today I want to do a Q&R because they're fun. They're also being able to connect with you, the listener. And so we want to just connect with you in that way.
We want to let you know about a new offering, a 31-day prayer devotional entitled Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. This book was born out of desperation. I didn't know how to lead my kids spiritually, so I started praying. Honest, dependent, daily prayers. Jeremiah 29:12 says, "Then you will call on me," God says, "and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you." If you want to learn more, head to intentionalparents.org. And if you partner with us at $25 a month or more, we'd love to send you a copy as a thank you.
So one of the questions, one of the first questions that came up, which I thought was just such a fun one, but give some content on parenting as a HISP. Now, if you remember, a HISP is a highly sensitive person, HSP. So talk about some content on parenting as a highly sensitive person. And oh my goodness, I don't know if you can hear that, but that is so loud. I think our whole house is shaking currently.
Putting in a road right next to our house.
I feel like it's fine. Anyway, so some content on parenting as a HISP. Now, a highly sensitive person. So Diane, do you want to start on this one? Because I know we've talked about this before, because I'm very sensitive to surroundings.
I was going
to
say the three out of the four of us are highly sensitive people.
Yes. So the whole idea of a highly sensitive person is there's an excellent book out by that exactly name by a psychologist who is herself a HISP, highly sensitive person. And she began to investigate what it is. And there's been all sorts of research done. And it's basically a person who has 10 to 30% more perception of everything around them, not just mentally and emotionally, but even physically. So pain is more intense, there's more nerve endings, and your ability to absorb information is increased. So it's not something wrong with you, although most of us grew up hearing you're too sensitive, you're too sensitive, don't be so sensitive. And I can see it now. I wish I had understood that Elizabeth was a HISP because they actually experience pain or illness with a greater intensity as well. And when you were a little girl, there's no doubt about it that you'd fall and it didn't hurt a little. It really hurt. And it was very clear that it really hurt. But we tend to think that there's just an even amount of that. So, but parenting as a HISP, I think it makes, I think it, there's beauty in it because you, if you live into who you really are, you can pick up all sorts of clues and you're usually right. What do I always tell you, Elizabeth, when, especially in the area of health with your kids or concerns about their development or something like that, what do I always say?
Listen to your gut. And you're usually always right. My intuition has always been right.
I actually say you're always right because I don't think you've proven wrong yet.
That's true.
And I think that if you are a HISP, you need to really trust, not blindly, but follow your intuition to all the way to the doctor's office.
Don't dismiss it. Yeah. And I still have to remind myself of that. There's like a few things we're noticing with one of our daughters that I'm like, I need to make that appointment. Like, and I just can easily be like, I'm overreacting.
Right.
Maybe it's not true. But you're right. I am right.
You are enjoying content brought to you by Intentional, a crowdfunded nonprofit that desires to help families and marriages all around the world in the area of discipleship and spiritual formation. This offering is completely free, thanks to the generosity of our growing community of legacy builders. Legacy Builders is a group of people from all over the world that gives monthly to fuel this dream that we have in our hearts of seeing discipleship to Jesus in the family become a way of life. A monthly gift of $5, $10 or even $30 can continue to fuel this ministry forward. Our dream is to invite people like you to join and partner with us at a financial level and to see this work integrated into families. So as you listen to this podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us? Would you allow the Spirit to lead you, even if it's just a few dollars a month? Thank you so much. And may the Spirit of Jesus give you wisdom, clarity, and joy as you pray about joining us. If you want to join today, go to intentionalparents.org and click on Give.
We had some people over to our house last night, and she was bemoaning the fact that her pediatrician was not recommending her to a neuropsychologist mm-hmm. for her child because something inside of her is picking up. She said, I can't even tell you exactly what.
Yeah.
But something is not neurotypical here. Yep. And I really want, so she's going to go back to the doctor again and say, what would it hurt you for you just mm-hmm. to recommend this?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Or refer me to this.
So that's one.
That's one aspect.
Yeah. And that's a really important one that I actually wasn't even thinking that, but I really appreciate you going there that the highly sensitive isn't just like, because I take that as surroundings and like being in the same space, mm-hmm. which that's a part of it too.
It is.
I think that's where it becomes the most problematic as a parent.
I do too.
It is
or the
for
most
me at least.
Difficult. Because
Phil, you're so lucky
to be
a parent.
You can
look at it and just be like, eh,
I had no idea you consider yourself a husband. So I just learned something about
it. I think he is even more than me.
Oh, that's,
you got to move your mic closer. There you go.
So I'm the odd person out who's not.
Well, no, I mean, I think it's because of how I grew up in the environment I grew up in. Yeah. Everything was very, my mom and dad were very organized and clean and everything. My mom especially. Like everything had a place. I mean, still to this day, you'll go and open a drawer and every towel is folded perfectly.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like she folded my clothes. They wouldn't let me pick my own clothes out until I was like 7. I remember the Saturday morning when they said I can wake up and I can wear whatever I want. I still remember the day where this was. And, you know, you go, that's so funny, but I think your environment creates that. And I'm not, there's no shade on that. I'm fine with being, you know, a highly sensitive person, but it's not in the same ways of like necessarily in tunement to the emotional or the maybe even intuition side.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. actually for me more of like surroundings and mm-hmm. like
visually
uh-huh. Sight, smell, sounds, mm-hmm. like they really get to me.
Yeah.
And I forget this sometimes. I'll be just really annoyed and I'll be like, what is going on? Why am I so annoyed? And certain things visually, even just aesthetics really bother me, like poor aesthetics. And our poor son, do you remember? Mm. We would go to church. We were pastoring at a church called Reality LA, and we met at an old school. And it was just like the classrooms for the kids were in this old school. And
he started talking about how much he hated church.
Yeah, and we couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
And so we just started asking questions. Then he started describing the building. When he had a problem, it was his description of the building. Was he was problem.
Well, it did look kind of like a prison.
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't like prison,
but he was
I guess.
5 and all the way to he starts high school next year. And that was, he's going to go to high school. And as we were looking into all the different schools, that was a huge factor from knowing
huge
him
part.
And recognizing if he's going to go somewhere every day and be with people, what the building looks like
will
help him or hurt him.
Like, but then knowing that you're not dismissing him.
No.
You know how easy it would be for a parent to just say,
yes,
just to dismiss that and say, you just have to get over that.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's maybe not even possible for him.
No,
to
we
get
have
over
to help teach him what to do with it. Like
he
can't control his surroundings all the time.
Right.
Sometimes he's going to be uncomfortable. And but even if he can have the frame of mind to know what's happening, why he feels the way he does in his body and what he might need after being in a place that is visually overwhelming to him, you know. But I think it is tricky. I'm thinking of like the person who asked this, I'm guessing, is a mom of young kids who's probably with their kids a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you not just be overwhelmed all the time by the mess, by the noise,
by the demands?
Especially when your kids are little, you can't just take a step away or go on a
especially
walk.
Especially if you don't only want to work all the time. Like, because to keep everything in order, as far as like if it's highly sensitive to the visual, that's insane. I also wonder if some of it is being really clear about that is a need that you have. So she's asking help or parenting advice. I think it's also just beginning to be honest with yourself that's the reality. Be honest with your spouse. I'm just thinking about you. This is our dynamic. This is all four of our dynamic. Mm-hmm. Last night, yesterday, I go over to Phil's house. We're having a meeting. We're talking about high level stuff, really cool dude stuff. It's high level things. And I was like, how you doing? And he's like, I've been cleaning the house all day. I was like, why? He's like, it's just been really helpful for Diane to be able to focus. She'll focus so much more. If you know, he's now I'm sure you're laughing because you're like, he wasn't cleaning the house. I might be getting you in trouble right now.
I didn't say I've been cleaning the house all day.
Yeah. He wasn't acting like Cinderella.
She's about ready to slap me right now. I did not say that.
He was saying that he wasn't complaining. He was so truly, and he didn't stay cleaning all day, but he had been doing some things around the house, which obviously we all help around the house. But it was really what was interesting. It was actually quite a loving thing. So to bring it back, it was you saying,
yes.
"No, I don't actually, I don't need the house to be this way. I'm actually totally fine." Yeah. To just get into the day, get into the meetings. But I know that it really does derail her. And I know it also helps her so much if these things really are done. Does. So you put all the stuff you need to do aside and you did it. And so I guess all to say, this is and he didn't say all day. I was being dramatic.
Yeah, that's okay.
But that is our dynamic too. Like if she gets overwhelmed, like if things are out of place, it's like, whoa. Like she will go from fine or to not fine really quick. Mm-hmm. So I'm just highlighting a dynamic that we all were in that.
I think the danger is in expecting yourself, if you're the HISP, or expecting your spouse, if they're the HISP, to change. And the fact is God made them that way. It's not an ism, something wrong with them. Mm-hmm. It's that there's about 10% of the population who would qualify as this highly sensitive to various stimulations and recognizing that that's who you are and building in. And this is what's hard for me, building in those breaks that I need from intensity. I can't live my life at a constant high intensity rate running from one thing to another. And I think that's typical of a HISP. You need to be able to decompress, walk outside. You know, one of the best ways for me, if I'm feeling it just building up in me, is to go outside. So go out on a walk is just so soothing to, you know, to my personhood. Or go through and clean the kitchen.
We were both really tired from, you know, we had a big week, like 10 days that were really busy. So when I want to decompress, I want to watch the Golden State Warriors play a basketball game.
They're
out of the playoffs, and I'm depressed yesterday. Yep. But she goes all high C. We've been gone, so the stove's a disaster. It's got to be cleaned.
Yes.
And then she, for her walk, she goes out back. The weeds. There's weeds out back. So she needs order because she's very sensitive to – and it was time for us to bring our yard back and stuff. But like all of a sudden, the yard, this kitchen.
But let me just be fair, because if she's anything like, if Elizabeth's anything like her mom, and I can only say this from your standpoint, they are actually in reality small things, but they feel huge, and they're communicated as if
they're urgent.
The world will end if this does not happen. At least this is not, this is my dynamic. So I often wonder, I'm like, I get it, but like, does it have to be done now that way?
Yes.
That's, well, and that's the conclusion. I'm always like, I can't fight with that. I don't know.
Part of that is that I'm coming from the place of, if it doesn't get done now, then it's just added to what has to be done already.
We should get into this.
Tomorrow and the next day. Like, I mean, I think every mom knows what it's like to get, when you get behind on, like when you have four children and you get behind on laundry, it's hours and hours and hours of work to get caught back up. So I think some of that for me is, it feels like, man, if I don't do it right now when I have help or when there is a moment, then it's just postponing the overwhelm to be even more overwhelming.
And maybe
tomorrow.
You could let everyone know what you should never say if you're the other. So if you're the HISP and you're, spouse says something to you about work, what should your spouse never say to you? What do I say to you that you say, this never helped? I can tell you.
You need to lower your expectations.
We want to invite you to the Intentional Motherhood Retreat 2024. Last year, over 600 mothers gathered together to learn, to worship, both to encourage and to be encouraged. The Father spoke and the Spirit moved and Jesus healed. And it was so incredible that we cannot wait to do it again. We want to invite you October 3rd through 5th here in Bend, Oregon, where we live. We know that the journey of motherhood is both beautiful and it is hard. It is both life-giving and exhausting at times. And we just want to create space for the Spirit to refresh you in your journey. We're going to lean in to how motherhood so gently and beautifully leads us in the way of spiritual formation. We're going to talk about how we need each other on the journey. We're going to talk about how our connection with God ultimately impacts the connection that we have with our kids. This retreat is both for mothers who desire to be mothers someday, all the way to grandmothers, and anywhere in between, because the truth is we all need each other. We need to learn from each other, and we need to be together. It was Dallas Willard who said, if you don't come apart for a while, you will come apart in a while. And that is especially true for us mothers. So we just invite you to come away with us. Let's see what the Spirit wants to do, and we can't wait to see you.
That never helps. Or if I will try to postpone it, like, well, we can do it. No, we cannot do it another time.
Laundry is not a problem.
Or we can postpone. We can postpone.
Diane loves doing laundry.
Oh, that's great.
She looks forward to it. She asks, do you have any laundry?
Oh, my gosh.
I can post it in there. What a fun problem to have. Well, anyway, I think on the idea, we can move on. But I think that you have another thing. But just to sum, I think talking to your spouse about it, being mm-hmm. open and honest about that, learning what that is, and then honestly being fair and realistic about your stage of life, because mm-hmm. some of that is just going to be harder at different seasons. Right now, it's easier. Mm-hmm. You don't have that much laundry, right? Or, mm-hmm. you know, it might be easier exactly. in your stage where
the house right now, stays clean for yeah. a long period of time. Yeah, yeah mm-hmm. absolutely.
Unless
there
our kids
is
come
a
over.
Day ahead where you're not constantly battling the messes.
Sure.
You know, or that when the only mess is made are your own.
Yes.
And you realize, yes. oh, maybe I was blaming my kids all those years and I was just yeah. as bad.
But you're getting into yeah. that. What we're talking about is really good. It's not just for husbands,
yeah.
but for honoring each other.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yes.
Whereas I love it. I love a perfectly neat drawer.
Yeah.
And occasionally I'll make one.
Yeah.
But I can function when it's not perfectly
totally.
Neat. Whereas she needs good. The neatness in order. So when she's feeling, we need to bring this place back to order. We've been gone for 10 days. And, you know, I can either get irritated at that, which is an ungodly response, or I can say, hey, this is a genuine need
yeah.
that she has the way she's wired, which is being intensified because she's highly sensitive to the environment.
Sure.
And then, you know, help.
Yeah. What were you going to say, sweetie? Yeah.
Well, I think it's also important. Yes, communication between your spouse, super important. But I think it's really easy as a parent who is highly sensitive to unintentionally make it your kid's fault and unintentionally just exude irritation for the noise, for the mess, for the meltdowns or the overwhelm that you're feeling. I mean, it is overwhelming whether you're sensitive or not. But I think it's important that we do as much as we can a good job communicating to our kids that it's not their fault that I'm sensitive. It's not their fault that I'm overwhelmed. And we need to know ourselves enough to recognize what's happening in the moment and even be able to say to our kids, hey, mom's just really overwhelmed by the noise right now. Sometimes when it gets too loud, it's just really hard for me to focus and it's overwhelming. Can we quiet down a little bit, or can we go on a walk, or can you take that audiobook into another room? I think that's something that not only are we communicating to our kids, hey, I love you, this is a me problem, problem's the wrong word, but this is a me thing, not a you thing. And not only that, we're teaching them to learn that about themselves. I mean, with our daughter Birdie, she's very sensitive to noise, but couldn't articulate that she was sensitive to noise for years and years and years and years and years.
I do.
So it's been a long time of trying to help her see, I think maybe that's too loud for you. Would you like headphones? Would you like, and years of resistance. And now all of a sudden, if we're going somewhere, she will just look straight at me and say, can we please not listen to music in the car?
I know.
And so years of teaching your kids to listen to their own bodies, to listen to their own selves when they feel overwhelmed. I think if we can keep that a positive thing and not like a, and we're not going to get it right every time. We're going to snap. We're going to yell at them to be quiet when we're overwhelmed. But to go back and say, it wasn't your fault. I'm a highly sensitive person and I'm extra sensitive to those noises.
I think
noises.
You're going to share a verse. I think it's important just to maybe say, we didn't do a lot of foundational work with this. So if you want to learn more about that, we're highly sensitive can rub some people the wrong way, meaning like, oh, I'm overly sensitive.
Doesn't it's mean not, emotionally sensitive.
No, and it doesn't mean overly sensitive like as a negative. It means that you're heightened, you have a heightened awareness to certain things that maybe not everyone does. Mm-hmm. And that's neither good nor bad. It's just an is. And so I think it's important to learn that about yourself and just hear what we're saying right now, which is how you're made is how you're made, and it's your job to discover that, figure it out. But anyway, I just wanted to clarify that. There's way more on that that we could say, or that we didn't research because this is a Q&R. But Phil, why don't you close this out with this question of the verse?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking, how am I going to get a scripture verse for this? But I got one. Because really what we're talking about is being, you know, we're talking about being a husband, but also being sensitive to people who are just being sensitive to others. So it made me think of Romans 15, starting the first verse. Now, we who are strong ought to bear the weaknesses of those without strength and not just please ourselves. Mm. Let each of us please his neighbor for his good or her good. For even Christ did not please himself. So it's the whole thing that Jesus lived for others. And then down further, it says, with one accord, may you with one voice glorify the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. So accept one another, just as Christ also accepted us to the glory of God. Mm-hmm. And that word accept, it's also welcome one another. So, you know, I welcome Diane with the way God's made her and do my best to not just please myself. Like, you know, well, actually, I don't want to vacuum right now. I want to watch the Warrior game. But no, maybe I should go vacuum right now and not just please myself.
Yeah.
So anyway, that just came to mind. Romans 15.
Beautiful. Yeah, we're going to move on to the next question.
Great.
Next question. And I actually really appreciate the honesty of this one, because I think this is true for lots of us. How to continue to find delight in a child that annoys you? Love him, but man, it can be tough. I love him, but whoa. Continue to find delight in a child that annoys you. Well, we've never experienced this, so let's just move on to the next. No, I think that's a really, I appreciate whoever asked that question. I appreciate the honesty for that, because that's real. I think there's moments where things are challenging. And the difference is, I think those who often maybe, the word annoy might be strong, but I think it's actually probably true. They get on your nerves, so to speak, or they become, they just kind of rub against you the wrong way. Mm-hmm. They're just friction, you know? Mm-hmm. Often the times when I have those frictions, it's with the child that is actually most opposite of me, usually. I mean, it's usually the kids that are more like you, and then vice versa, the kids that are more like me. Like, we end up kind of having those natural, you know, things that we feel. But anyway, first thoughts on that. We can go all sorts of directions, but
I think so often when we have those thoughts or feelings, we immediately judge ourselves for them. I shouldn't feel this way. I should be loving all the time. But I think in those scenarios, especially if it's like a consistent thing where you're recognizing, I'm dreading certain scenarios with this kid, or I'm dreading when they wake up in the morning, or I'm dreading bedtime, or whatever it is, I think it's important that we take a minute and let ourselves think about that and feel that and get specific. Because I think it's easy to say that I just really butt heads with this kid, or they're hard to connect with, or they annoy me. But sometimes if we can take a step back and just get really specific about what actually frustrates us, and then also look at what doesn't, like what actually delights us about that kid, I feel like it lessens the sting of that a little bit, to maybe just say, actually, I'm just really frustrated with how bedtime goes, and it's stressful and I dread it all day long. Or I'm just really frustrated with how much they argue and push back, and I like to have peace, and arguing is really draining for me, and we need to work on that, and we need to have a conversation with my spouse, and we need to come up with some sort of plan of how we're going to deal with the arguing. Or I think specifics are important rather than just this whole person annoys me. But then I think a layer deeper than that is, especially if it's a consistent thing, we have to start to ask ourselves, like, what is this bringing up for me? Because oftentimes when that happens with our kids, there's something, like, I'll just use myself as an example. When I find myself in those seasons, usually it's because a kid is pushing back to me all the time. And that brings up for me feelings of, that was not okay to do as a kid. Not because you guys ever would have shamed me for arguing or pushing back or having an opinion, but I somehow heard a message that it's not okay to push back. It's not okay to need anything. And so when my kids need a lot and push back a lot, it's bringing up all sorts of not right, but messages I heard as a kid. And so it feels bigger to me than it actually is. It's really difficult for me to just put it in a category of they're expressing their needs and their wants. Right. Like it feels deeply personal to me.
Yeah.
And I've had to do a lot of work around that to heal from that, to like, I mean, we could do a total deep dive into that. But I think that that's also, if you can find the time and space to ask yourself, is this bringing up something from my childhood? Is there some memory here of why this kid's behavior feels so big to me?
Yeah.
You know, and maybe it is big, but oftentimes there's something underneath that for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn, yeah. I mean, that gets me thinking too, because I feel like I grew up the child that was the annoyance. The frustration.
Yeah, you sensed it from your mom.
And I think it came out of a belief that there's one right way to be.
Yeah.
Instead of a broader belief that God made each child unique.
Yeah.
Uniquely gifted, but also the unique, what the old King James called besetting sins, tendencies. If we can learn to see our kids for who they are and just enjoy them for who they are, I think it's an incredible gift. So as soon as you start saying that one of your kids annoys you or something, it brings up for me the feeling of there was something wrong with me because my mom was always, it seemed to me, my mom was always irritated with me that I was too shy, not outgoing enough, too this, not enough of that. So I guess I'm coming at from a whole different angle of, gosh, you got to try so hard not to communicate that to your kids, that non-acceptance, and maybe just even asking God to give you his view of that child who's pushing your button, you know, pushing against you. Or in your case, you know, bringing up things that you thought it wasn't acceptable to push back. And now your child is pushing back. And so then you feel like, oh, am I less of a parent? Because, you grow as a parent. Because I do remember by the time Matthew was born, 6.5 years after you, 12 years after John Mark, our parenting had actually changed. So much so that my mom was appalled that I let John Mark, Matthew argue so much.
That's so funny because our oldest will often be appalled at how the youngest behaves.
And I just remember even learning by the time Rebecca was born, even remembering in teenage years, how much she just needed to have her say. She just needed to say it. Once she said it, it was like, okay, she didn't need to win. But she definitely needed to say it.
We have one like that.
And that could seem like arguing. Or with Matthew, I mean, he just was a brilliant arguer and quite often could convince me. But I do remember that my mom being appalled that we let him argue and feeling like he's not arguing. He's just giving me another perspective. So you do change as a parent too.
Our poor firstborns.
I know. You know what, though? I think even it's not even your poor firstborns as much as it is the next ones who watch you on the case of your poor firstborns.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who then try and be perfect.
Wow. Well,
yeah. My only thought was I'm glad you said what you said because that was what I was thinking. You grew up thinking my parents don't want me to change.
They want me to
change. And you were made a certain way. And so
to be more like my mom.
Thinking of the importance of what you call secure attachment, how important that is. If a child grows up and picks up, my mom's irritated with me, and they grow up with that, it's going to be really harmful. And so, and the parents are responsible for helping their children develop godly character. So that's the training part. But it has to be done in love because God is developing our character still. He's chipping away at us, but we feel fully loved and fully accepted. So I think all I was thinking of was Psalm 139, you know, where it says, you know, we are fearfully and wonderfully made. And so God skillfully wove us together so that every child is that. And then at the end, though, that psalm says, search me, O God, and know my heart, and try me, see if there be any way of pain in me. So I think I think as a parent, that's what you're talking about. So I think it causes, you know, God's using you to shape your kids and your kids to shape you. So when I'm irritated, I need to search my own heart. Yeah. Like I like your term, shine a flashlight in my soul or something like that that you guys use. I really like that. That's what the Holy Spirit can do.
Flashlight to the cave of your soul.
Yeah, in the cave of your soul so that then I can see what's really going on, but also I won't wound this child and they grow up thinking, you know,
and that
I was the one who irritated mom. That's going to be really damaging.
It's
and they'll,
so
they'll
damaging.
Work through their whole life to get over that.
Yeah.
And it's so much easier for them to understand God fully loves me, even though he doesn't necessarily like all the choices I'm making. He's shaping me, but he loves me.
We have a new offering for you. If you would like to receive daily or weekly text messages and encouragement around parenting, marriage, with prayers and scriptures, click the link in the show notes and we would love to send those to you. Can't wait to connect more with you.
And that part, Dad, I think is the most important part of asking the Holy Spirit, that whole idea of like, shine a flashlight in the cave of my soul, show me any hurtful ways in me.
Yeah.
Because if we just wake up each morning and say, I'm just going to choose not to be annoyed with this kid, I'm going to not show them. And you're just, the kid, they're so perceptive.
Yeah. Yeah.
So much of communication is nonverbal.
Yeah.
It won't work. You will communicate it as much as you're trying so hard not to. But if it's allowing God to really show you, like, what is this about? Mm-hmm. What am I actually frustrated about? And, like, take that time. Those aren't destructive thoughts if you're doing them with God and you're being honest and you're asking God to change your heart. You're asking God to heal you. You're asking God to heal your relationship. And to give a little bit of hope to the parent that asked that question, I deeply struggled with that with one of our kids and had so much fear that our future relationship was going to be very challenging, that we would maybe never have a good relationship. I thought we were so different. I felt very hopeless when she was younger. And it is drastically different now. I have so much hope. I cannot wait until she's older and I get to be more of the friend role, less of an authority. We're way more alike than I thought we were. And we had to pursue a lot of healing. And there was just a lot of medical trauma that had gotten in the way. But I think there is hope. Like, things really can change. And things have so drastically changed for the better. And it took a lot of work and it took a lot of time and a lot of honesty. But I think it doesn't necessarily mean that they're always going to be incredibly hard for you. Could just be a really hard stage that they're going through.
And I think to maybe wrap this question up, I think it's important because everything, I don't need to add because you guys said so many things. I do just want to highlight that what everyone said was so helpful because I think you have the angle of the parent, but then you have the angle of the child. And then I think, like we've all learned, if we are parents, that you take a moment to go, what if I chose to accept and delight the unique differences of this little one instead of be so annoyed at them. Because with everything that maybe bothers you, there's another thing connected to that, which is a huge gift to you. It's seeing the world differently. It's delighting in who they actually are. It's that concept that we've talked about, you know, you just not your job to just mold your kids, but unfold them. You're discovering who they are, but then you're discovering like, okay, maybe that's not my deal, but like, that's theirs, and I'm going to get into that with them. And it all depends on ages and stages too, but great response, everybody. You know what's really interesting? Why we were all talking, why all you were answering, I was looking up, I was going to look up a question, and literally an email came in of a question.
No.
And then I read the question. I was like, this is a great question.
Okay.
So thank
Talk
you for the live,
in the moment.
Spirit-filled, it must be. So this is actually, it's a long question, but I actually think it's a little bit of a, it's not very long as far as the content, but I think we'll give a little bit of a scope. You guys want to go there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're going there. Sounds so I don't think you have an option.
You never tell us what the questions are anyway.
I know, because you're better if not. Okay, so this is from specifically a wife, and she is saying that her and her husband have three kids. They've been married almost a decade. They're in their 30s. They lead a church. The church has been growing. It's about 700 people to give kind of scope of the responsibility. And she basically says, I'm a stay-at-home mom and would say I've given up my entire life to be home caring for our kids. So here comes the question. That's the setup. What would you say to wives and moms in the background with husbands in such a big role? We have no clue about this. Like, I'm just laughing because this is like so much of all of our lives. Yeah. I treasure my role and I believe wholeheartedly that this is the godliest calling and am growing in perspective and gratitude. I think there's a lot of godly calling. So I agree, but also like, I think there's a lot of things that we can do that are really mm-hmm. godly, but also it's a difficult position. And yes, it is. We totally agree. Long, complicated hours for my husband, deep ministry. And unfortunately, they're saying they don't have an older mentor couple. So mm-hmm. you guys can be that for them. They'll pick you. Mm-hmm. You guys can just immediately go fly and see them. No, but they don't have an older mentor couple walking with them. They're praying for one, though. He has some wonderful mentors and team around him, but she struggles. She's saying, I struggle with loneliness mm-hmm. and the constant, and we know this, the constant mundane, you know, feeling like her relationship with Jesus isn't vibrant. It just feels constant and mundane. Mm-hmm. They have a wonderful marriage and they would love to understand one another more. Could you speak to the juggle of ministry, marriage, and young kids? Mm. So a small question.
How many hours do we have?
I know. Yeah. How many hours do we have? So I think that's a really great, thoughtful question. I know the reason I wanted to even address it is because I know that that's been our world. That's been all of our world, you know, all four of us in different times. So, and I know that there's different seasons. So, and then Elizabeth has done it different than you. And, and then we've been in it different times and you guys were in that role really all the way through when the kids were younger. So yeah, let's just start talking about that. And Phil, I know you'll have some stuff to say, but ladies specifically, I'd love to hear maybe just initial thoughts and we can get things going.
Well,
which angle do you want
to
approach?
I wish somebody had told me,
sure.
You know, I mean, I think I could write a book on, I wish I had known.
That's a great idea. You should do that.
I wish somebody had told me that every minute I'm putting into my kids is eventually going to translate into ministry into other people's lives. Mm-hmm. Because really what a mom is doing at home is spiritual formation in mm-hmm. her children, mm-hmm. as well as emotional formation,
yes.
quite often intellectual formation. I mean, you're really forming the values of your child in your home. And so if I wish somebody had told me all of this is preparation for future, and I think it would have been easier for me not to feel guilty when there were seasons where I couldn't be as involved in the church mm-hmm. ministry as I had been before. But there's, you know, there are unspoken demands and expectations on the wife of a pastor, generally mm-hmm. speaking. And I think some of that's changing mm-hmm. a lot of times now. The wife is given an actual role, but that has good things and bad things about it, because if you're getting a paycheck for anything, there's also a whole lot of expectations that give you less flexibility. But I guess I wish somebody had just come alongside me and said, just being yourself when you walk in and filled with the Spirit and having spent time with Jesus, when you walk through those church doors, God will use that. Not necessarily all this long list of the things you're in charge of or that you're doing that is measurable. I think it would have been easier for me to be at peace about the choices I was making to put more into my kids than maybe some people thought I ought to be, you know, homeschooling, basically. You know, we homeschooled partly because we desperately needed more flexibility in our family to flex to very demanding church schedules. So the real underlying probably impetus to investigate homeschooling was for that.
Interesting,
because school is inflexible and church was completely inflexible. And there was an awful lot of clashing, I guess. But I guess the most important thing is to know that you have your whole life ahead of you and that every moment you spend with your kids making church a great place for them, mm-hmm. full of warm, fuzzy, happy family memories, is going to net so much ministry in the years ahead.
Yeah.
So now I was pressured in our church, the first church we were in. There was a high, immense amount of pressure on the wives to be, you know, doing, mm-hmm. in charge of things and doing wow. stuff. So I think sometimes you have to resist sure. that.
Yes.
On the other hand, you have this open door. If you're the kind of person who loves to multitask, who's enlivened by being out and amongst people, then you have this incredible opportunity. I mean, I felt like also just by being married to Phil, there were opportunities that your average woman in the church would never have just because I was Phil's wife. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
that's kind of rambly.
You're not rambling. I could never have full, you know, the Bible says, do the work of an evangelist, fulfill your ministry. So we do have unique callings. We're talking about the church right now, but this is true for you know, whatever people are called into. I could not have done what God called me to do without her. She was with me the whole time. We were a team. But she did a masterful job. I mean, now you will say, I've heard you say it, so I can quote you, that you gave 30 of the best years of your life to raising John Mark, Rebecca, Elizabeth, and Matthew, and you don't regret
not a bit.
And she never complained. I don't remember her ever complaining. I don't remember her. So, you know, in our parenting film series, we teach. Mm. We wanted our kids to love Jesus, love the church, and love the scriptures. Mm. And one of the reasons they love the church is because she never complained. Yeah, dad's out again.
Well, but you know, but I think it's important. Some people do, and that's like I'm just thinking of this mom. Like if you have complained, I think that's a wonderful gift that you didn't. But I will also say you can still be redeemed. It's still redeemable even if you have. You know, I was setting up that as a caveat because I think that's one of your strengths. You saw that early on. You got that. I think that's a huge gift. But I'm thinking about, man, it's hard.
Good thing about her question, she says we have a good marriage, so she's not like bitter that her husband's so busy. She's saying how demanding of a role it is because it's not 9-to-5.
Yeah.
And so the good thing is she's embraced it and she knows she's called to it, but she's lonely. I mean, you speak to that. You get up some mornings and it was the drudgery of changing diapers but she never complained to me about it. She's amazing. So what a gift that was to me. And yet she was by my side. Whatever my main responsibility was, she was there, you know?
Mm.
And so I think just being there, you weren't leading something until much later, but you were involved and people saw us as Phil and Diane. And I think that's really important.
Mm. I think the most important thing is that she needs to be herself.
Yeah.
And, you know, there isn't one right way of being a mom, being a pastor's wife, being involved in church ministry. You know when you've hit your stride. This is the right balance of busyness versus recuperating or quietness. Mm. And I think also my husband did this amazing job of really involving me. It was our ministry, even when 90% of the time I was at home with little ones, making it possible for him to do our ministry. Mm-hmm. And that's a remarkable and rare partnership that Phil made me be a part of, enabled me to be part of. But
And
then our kids, I mean, Elizabeth, you guys became part of it too. I mean, all of our major decisions, even should we move to this new ministry, it was a family decision. You know, I think that's great too. To involve your kids. So
if you're enjoying this content and you want to go deeper, we have an amazing resource that we want to tell you about. It's the Intentional Film Series, Raising Passionate Jesus Followers. Now, this is an incredible tool for you for spiritual formation in the family. And we created this film series to help parents in their God-given task to raise and disciple their own children. Now, our hope is that we're able to help you and give you some of the tools that I know we so desperately need as we're in the process of raising our kids, and Phil and Diane have actually raised their kids. This is a 9-session film series on the process of what raising a passionate Jesus follower actually looks like. There's some workable solutions in here, there's a bunch of wisdom from the scriptures, and there's a bunch of practical help in your journey as you are raising your children. We cover all sorts of things like parental roles, goals versus values. What is discipline versus punishment? How do I create a heart of obedience in my child where they actually want to obey? What does a heart of self-control look like? Or how do I even help my child in the process of character development? We cover that and so many more things. You can use this film series in a variety of ways. You can use it at your home, preferably with your spouse if that's applicable, with a group of friends or in your community, or even through your local church. All you need to do is head over to our website, intentionalparents.org, click on film series, and then follow the prompts. We have a bunch of other resources there that you can check out, but we do pray that this blesses you in your pursuit of raising passionate Jesus followers.
So that's one generation, one perspective. What's your perspective? I have a couple thoughts, but I'd be curious.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I can relate to everything she said, and it feels very fresh for me. The things that have been coming to mind as everyone's been talking is, and just hearing the season that she finds herself in, that it likely feels like a season of obscurity. And I mm-hmm. wish that was a word that we talked about more, mm-hmm. or stages of life that we talked about more, because I think many times there are more seasons of obscurity than there are of mm-hmm. whatever word you want to use, prominence or mm-hmm. feeling like you know what your purpose is and you're, you know, fulfilling exactly what you're supposed to be doing. And yet we see all over Scripture all these prominent people that God used greatly, normal, ordinary people mm-hmm. who spent years in obscurity. Mm-hmm. I mean, you think of Moses was in Midian for 40 years yeah. before God called him to lead the people of Israel, and he didn't even want to lead the people. Mm-hmm. Jesus, 30 years before people really knew who he was, and he was actively...
I like that idea of applying, instead of Moses, moms. Moms feel like they're in, seriously. In the wilderness for 40
yes.
years.
Yes.
And they're like, I don't even know if I want it. I mean, I do want this.
But remember, that was 40 years before he was in the wilderness.
I know.
Yes.
When he was in Midian before God called him to even do
and
anything.
And what was he doing? He was tending sheep.
Cleaning up feces. That's what he was doing.
Yeah. And I think a lot of motherhood is that. Yeah. Especially the
young years.
Young, yeah. All the way until I feel like with the older two, it feels less like that now, mm-hmm. high school and middle school. But that's a lot of years. And at the same time, because I feel like I can so resonate with where she's at, I feel like I'm 1 foot where the person asking this question is and in a transition to a different stage, but I'm not there yet. I feel like I'm straddling the fence. And I keep saying I don't want to shortchange our kids. Mm-hmm. Like I want to give them everything they need in the years that are really, really important before I'm too distracted doing other things.
Yeah. Well, we both do, just yeah, for clarity.
Totally. But totally. I understand. But I mean in my role as their mom, yeah. as their, you know,
as the primary one who's home with them.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
But
that's good.
I think to give the young moms listening, the person who asked this question, a little bit of hope. And mom, you said all of these same things. What God is doing in you mm-hmm. in the current role that you're playing and specifically in the hardness of it, in the loneliness of it, mm-hmm. in the mundane, in every day feels like it's the same. Is it always going to feel mm-hmm. this way? What God is doing in you, what God is doing mm-hmm. in your kids, what God is doing in your marriage, God is doing in your church, all of those things are things you don't actually want to miss out on. Yeah. They're all things yeah. that you're going to look back and say, wow, God was doing stuff that I could not see it because it was slow. And God's timing mm-hmm. is usually mm-hmm. very slow because it was mm-hmm. slow year over year over mm-hmm. year, conflict over conflict, boring day after boring day. that the beautiful thing about ministry specifically is that you get better with age, not mm-hmm. less yes, effective yes. with age. If you mm-hmm. continue to grow, if you continue to learn, if you continue to want to understand what the younger people are experiencing, mm-hmm. you mm-hmm. know, then it's something that you become more useful, more fruitful with age. I think the same is true as a parent. Like, because you're growing with your kids, mm-hmm. you become a more effective parent as time goes on. You know, you don't, because you have no idea how to do it when things first start. Mm. You still have no yeah. idea how to do it years and years. And But I think if we can, and this is where I love that they're praying for older people in their lives, because I think we need two stages of people. We need people in our lives, and this has been hard to find for us, who are just a little bit ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fresh enough that they can.
Yeah, 5 or 6 years or
Yeah, where you can see a picture of what's coming, but that doesn't feel like a lifetime away. And then you need people who are significantly older, who just have so much wisdom and can speak so much truth into your life. And, well, maybe let me give a third category that I think is also important. You need people who are doing the same thing you're doing.
Yeah.
Who can just speak to, I know, right? Like, that's totally what it feels like. You're not failing. Like, we got up to do another day. And I know that that's hard to find, especially when you're home with kids all the time. But I think that's a prayer God wants to answer. And
I do too.
And I think while you're waiting, there's also something God can do in the loneliness. But I think, man, we all need people in all the different stages, just encouraging us to keep doing what we're doing. You know?
Brilliant. I completely agree. The only thing that comes to mind is something you and I just talked about. We just talked about this idea of obscurity. And I think we're at a stage in our world where staying faithful is a very, two very simple words. But unfortunately, we do not have a ton of great examples of people finishing strong. And unfortunately, especially in church, we do not have many examples of, with so many men and women both failing, whether that's at leadership or morally or all these different levels. We don't have good examples of people actually sticking out the in the faith for a very long time. That's why you, Phil and Diane, I think are wonderful examples. You give a model to people, not only to us close up, but anyone, even anyone listening. It's an example of what it looks like to stay faithful. But a really key word to stay faithful, so to this mom that's asking the question, the key to stay faithful is this biblical word that we hear all the time, patience. But when you break down in the Greek what that actually means, we did a little study on this, and it essentially means patience. Means active endurance and the frame of mind that endures. It's this idea that you are actively, it's like instead of sitting at a, in a waiting room, waiting for the doctor patiently, it's more of the kind of patience of like an endurance of finishing a marathon. It's an active endurance. And I think a lot of people that are feeling that obscurity, like the mom feeling this, like it's hard, but you need to have an active endurance, the kind of patience that Jesus talks about. And then James 1:12, I love this, talking about the word patience. In the Amplified version, it says, blessed or happy to be envied. I love that. Blessed is the man or woman who is patient under trials and stands up under temptation. For when you have stood the test and been approved, he will receive the victor's crown of life, which God promised to those who love him. Wow. There's reward wrapped into this moment. And so to the young mom listening, there's so many rewards, like Diane said, that you can't even see. And that you, that if you even knew, I don't even think you, you would have, I mean, I don't even think you fully understood how big, right?
And
how much of a blessing it was to be patient and be faithful in those years when nobody saw what you were doing. And when Phil's on stage yet again, doing all this cool stuff, he's traveling to London again. And then you're like, and I have the kids for 10 days, right? Like,
that's right.
We've been on all of those, we've been
taking
all those dynamics.
All the responsibilities, not just your own. And yeah, absolutely. I think that one thing that Phil and I could offer is perspective. So Phil's coming up on his 50th year of full-time ministry.
Is it July?
In July. July 15th.
Be that's the beginning of it.
The beginning of
50. You heard that right, everybody.
The
50
beginning of
years.
The end of
faithful ministry.
And we've been married for 45, almost 46 years. So that's a lot of years, a lot of decades in ministry. And, you know, our ministry has changed over the years. In the early 70s and 80s, you were primarily a worship pastor. And then worked with an evangelist and then a teacher and a preacher. And we started to church. And we can look back at some of these big things that seemed like such a big deal at the time. And 45 years later, still the biggest deals are kids. They're the biggest deal.
That's
when
great,
we all get together, when their kids come to our house and they love us. When I watch you and John Mark and Matthew and Rebecca be more than friends to each other, but be like there when you need each other, be more like sisters and brothers in Christ, the most important thing we've ever done is raise these kids.
Yes.
So and we did it while leading churches and ministries, and life was always a little out of balance.
For us.
But if I could just remind you, this, you're someday going to look back and you're going to say, I loved the ministry. I loved this church we were a part of. Ultimately, even that is a little disappointing, but my kids, I don't regret one moment of loneliness or of hard work. Or the humility that comes from making a lot of mistakes. Not one minute.
You know, you're expounding on the truth of 3 John 4, which is our verse for intentional. I have no greater joy than this, to hear of my children walking in the truth. So the greatest thing you'll ever do is raise your kids to follow the way of Jesus. That's what she's really saying. When you get to the end, you look back.
That's the most
there's failures that things you wish you hadn't done or could have done. There's great mountaintop experiences, but your kids trump it all. And especially if God's, by his grace, has brought them to himself and they're truly walking with him. It's like your cup overflows. There's nothing like it.
Great job today, team. Thank you for that lovely conversation. We're going to hit more of the questions soon, but thank you everybody for listening today. We'll be back next week.